Hello again, everyone. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I am Brian Dinovellis, and it's that time again. College basketball finally tips off for real this week. And here on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, of course, there are so many storylines going into the week and going into the season. We will be talking on this show about our three Big East teams, UConn, St. John's, Seton Hall. We will also preview some of the big games in the Tri-State this week as we tip off the 2024-25 college basketball season. And I will be joined by none other than Dave Borges, who has been covering UConn men's basketball since 2007 for CTInsider.com and Hearst Media Connecticut Group. No one does it better than Dave. And so many storylines to talk about with UConn, right? I mean, their quest to three-peat. Only one program in the history of men's college basketball has won more than two straight. That, of course, UCLA, the dynasty in the 60s and 70s. And I've said this before, don't bet against Dan Hurley, right? I told you after he won this first NCAA championship, he would win multiple. I didn't know he'd do it in the next year, but I said it right here on this podcast. He would win many NCAA championships. Now he's won back-to-back, and people are still doubting him. Do not doubt Dan Hurley. If anyone in college basketball can three-peat, it's Dan Hurley. All right? Who is better than Hurley right now as a men's college basketball head coach? Answer, no one. And who better to talk to than the man who's been doing it longer on the UConn beat than Dave Borges. But not all eyes are on the Huskies as we start this 24-25 season. Of course, plenty of eyes on St. John's. So much hype, and rightfully so. Can Rick Pitino lead St. John's back to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2019? And not only get there, but can they get their first win in 25 years? Can you believe it's been that long? A quarter of a century since St. John's has won an NCAA tournament basketball game. I'll break down the Red Storm's chances. And then, of course, there's Seton Hall, the mystery team. Shaheen Holloway has retooled, revamped his roster. Only three returning players, 10 new faces, a number of four-star recruits, all with different question marks, all who come to South Orange with some baggage, okay? Because they were once upon a time, highly regarded recruits who went elsewhere. Some had success. Some are still trying to find success. Some are just, you know, tipping the iceberg, as we see. We've only seen the tip of the iceberg with what they can do. So many question marks. It's kind of like the land of misfit toys, right? In South Orange, we've got a Charlie in the Box. We've got the train with square wheels and the pistol that shoots jelly, right? Listen, just follow me on this one, right? Santa and Rudolph, they go to the land of misfit toys, and then they find homes for these toys. Well, Shaheen Holloway is like Santa Claus, right? And he's welcoming all of these misfits to his home in South Orange, and he's trying to put them together and find homes for these toys, right? A lot of toys, beauties in the eye of the beholder. Well, Shaheen has assembled them. And can he find lightning in a bottle? Don't bet against Shaheen Holloway either. Those are three head coaches you don't want to bet against. Hurley, Pitino, and Shaheen. Three of the best in the Big East. We're going to talk about all these teams. We're going to get to Dave Borges in just a minute. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. Mike is a trusted name in real estate. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, we're talking Monmouth and Ocean Counties, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577. Tell him Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. And now, it is my pleasure to welcome back a good friend of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast, Dave Borges from Hearst Connecticut Media Group and ctinsider.com. Dave, thanks for coming on again. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brian. Just getting ready for the season to start in a few days. UConn doesn't start till Wednesday, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, Dave, you've been with the Huskies, what, step by step since 2007, I believe, and that's like about 42,500,000 steps by my count.
Yeah, but who's counting? All I know is it's been four national championships and five Final Fours. Which is pretty amazing.
That is pretty amazing. You need a ring, Dave. I would think at this point, UConn should give you a ring, no?
Yeah, I don't think Dan Hurley would agree with that. But it's all good.
No, it is. It is. You've been there. You've had some great seats along the way. Calhoun, Ollie, now Dan Hurley. So what do you? Let's just start with the big question: can this team three-peat? I know they can, but in your mind, will they be there? Can they get to the Final Four and put themselves in position?
They can, they have another very talented team, a very deep team, but a younger team as well, and that'll make it trickier. But as far as I'm concerned, Dan Hurley and his staff have earned the benefit of the doubt. I mean, 2 years ago they weren't even a preseason top 25 team, and they went on to win it all. Last year, as Dan will be quick to tell you, they were not only picked to finish third in the Big East, but the voting by the coaches, they were closer to fourth place than second in the Big East preseason coaches poll. And of course, they go on to one of the greatest seasons, really, of all time, certainly in the last 25, 30 years. So, yeah, it doesn't matter how many guys they lose to the NBA, and they've lost a lot. You got to believe that they're still going to be up there contending for a national title, contending for the Final Four. And so there's no question they can do it.
Yeah, and he has become a master of retaining, of certainly recruiting, developing, getting ready players for the NBA, but also retention. That is so big in this day and age with the NIL. And what is it about his ability to retain players and then add the right pieces?
He's built a culture here, and I know it sounds a little cliche, but he's built a culture here that the kids love. They love being here at UConn. They love being coached by Dan Hurley. Coached very hard, but ultimately he's proven to be successful in so many ways. They love their teammates. There's a culture that's been developed that kids don't want to leave, that very few have. There's been a few kids over the years who have left, and generally it's been because of playing time, and even the few kids who've left, most of the time, Dan kind of agreed, yeah, it's probably good to move on. There's been very few times where they've actually been surprised that a kid decided to leave. But you look at last year's group of freshmen who are now sophomores, they didn't play a whole lot last year, and three of the four guys, maybe two of them don't play a whole lot this year. But they understand that. They know their time will come, and they know that Dan Hurley's been able to develop players and send them to the NBA, and so they tend to stick around UConn rather than look for greener pastures.
Yeah, and listen, there's some green pastures in stores last time I checked. So, the pasture, the grass isn't always greener for some of these guys. So, good for them. So, your thoughts that what you've seen from UConn practices, and I don't know if you've been privy to any of these scrimmages, but how have they looked so far heading into Wednesday's matchup against Sacred Heart?
Well, all we've been able to really see was a sort of an inter-squad scrimmage month and boy, was it a couple of months ago, I guess, and then they had an exhibition game against Rhode Island a few weeks ago at Mohegan Sun Arena. They certainly looked good. They looked good in that they struggled a little bit in the first half of that URI game. Overall, their rebounding was not great, but their shooting was excellent. They a couple of guys whose you question what kind of role they were going to play came up with big games in that particular game. And again, it was just an exhibition, but against a team that's picked to finish towards the bottom of the Atlantic 10. But yeah, from what we've heard from practices, Solo Ball, one of those sophomores, played great against URI. Supposedly he's been hitting, he's been proving himself as a shooter that he didn't quite prove last year as a freshman. One of the transfers, Aiden Mahaney from St. Mary's, there was questions on whether he'd be able to handle sort of the toughness of the Big East coming from the West Coast. He's not a big kid. He's 6'3", 185 at best. He played very well against URI. Liam McNeely, the freshman, McDonald's All-American, potential one and done. He is suffering from a calf injury right now, so he may not play. I'm almost certain he won't play Wednesday night, and he might miss a couple of two or three of the Huskies' first games this season. So we may not get a true glimpse of him for a little bit. But overall, they've looked really good, and again, I think they're a very talented deep team.
And boy, talk about depth at center. You might not have a better center combination than Samson Johnson and Terrace Reed in the Big East or even the country. You know what they can bring athletically and size, getting to the rim, right? Two different types of players. But I mean, how many teams in the country can match that 1-2 punch at center?
Yeah, and that's been a key to their success the last couple of years. First with Sanogo and Klingon, last year with Klingon and Johnson. Now we got Johnson and Terrace Reed as a board. And going back to that exhibition game, which is again is pretty much all we've had to go on. Terrace Reed came out and did not play well in the first half. Looked a little bit lost. Didn't defend very well. Didn't rebound very well. Kind of turned the ball over once or twice. Second half he was excellent, and he was the kind of the low post presence, the back to the basket skilled big man that we've all heard about. He's a really big kid. He's a really nice kid. He's a fun guy to be around. Yeah, him and Samson Johnson, it'll be a little different. I mean, without the 7'3" guy either on the bench or on the court. But so the rim protection could be a bit of an issue. Samson Johnson's a good rim protector. Got to stay out of foul trouble. But it's going to be a different look this year with those two guys. But it could be a very effective one.
Okay. Look, you talk about respect for UConn, right? The awards that they're getting, the preseason awards. I mean, it seems like almost every player on this team has some preseason award, right? Whether it's Caravan on the Karl Malone watch list, McNeely on the Julius Erving watch list, both of them, McNeely and Caravan on the Naismith watch list, Samson Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar watch list, Aiden Mahaney, Jerry West watch list. I mean, eyes around the country are certainly taking notice. Whatever it's worth for preseason awards, these players, come with a reputation.
Yeah, four of the five positional award lists UConn was represented. The only one they weren't was point guard. So Hassan Diawara may have a little chip on his shoulder. I'm sure Dan Hurley will remind him of that. But it kind of goes to show, like Aiden Mahaney was, like you said, was on the top 20 watch list for the Jerry West Shooting Guard Award. He also was was picked to finish third team All Big East. And going into the Big East Media Day, I was wondering, other than Caravan, which UConn player would be honored or players would be honored, sort of on the first three teams. And I figured maybe Jalen Stewart, maybe Liam McNeely, the freshman, just out of reputation, maybe even Diarra. It ends up being Mahaney. I was a little bit surprised, but he certainly was a high scorer, a good shooter for 2 years out in St. Mary's. So that's and he might not even start. So, a
Wow.
guy who's on the awards list and a guy who's a third team All Big East preseason pick may not even be a starter for UConn. So that kind of shows sort of the depth that this team has.
That's interesting. Because I guess that states, that points towards Hurley's ability to, recruit and develop some of these shooters when they come in from another school. Certainly, Cam Spencer comes to mind. So maybe because of Spencer's success being drafted and all that, and in the NBA, maybe they think Hurley can do that with Mahaney in addition to what he's done.
Right, and it says from on Mahaney's part, he's coming in here after being a starter as a freshman and sophomore, and probably knowing he might not. And again, I'm not saying he won't because it's really tough to call their starting lineup for Wednesday night already. But he comes in knowing he may not start. I mean, he may come off the bench and be sort of a sixth man type, and I'm sure he's okay with that. So A couple of guys on this team are going to potentially not get quite the minutes that they assume they might or hope they might. But by and large, it hasn't been an issue with guys here at UConn. They've understood their role and again, didn't leave afterwards. They stuck around and had a better, bigger role the next season. So, yeah, we'll see what happens this season.
I mean, look at Tristan Newton. Just point to him and how he developed into, such a star player and an All-American. And Hassan Diarra, sixth man of the year last year, and now he's going to be handed probably the keys to this offense, right?
I think so. I assumed so. He did start the exhibition game. Since then, Dan has said, whatever role he plays, whether he's a starter or a key man off the bench, so he's kind of held that. He's kind of kept that open as a possibility that maybe they just like the way he's provides a spark off the bench, even though he's a grad senior now and has done so much for the program. But it's possible they think that that's the role that help best fits the team. So we'll see on Wednesday night. We'll see. I think the starting lineup Wednesday night will be interesting, but I also think it won't be set in stone because I think different guys could emerge in the starting five throughout the season. And we all know that McNeely will be a starter when he's healthy, but he won't start obviously on Wednesday.
Okay, that's fair. So what is your prediction, Dave? What does your crystal ball say will be the starting five against Sacred Heart?
Well, I've been saying all along I thought Diarra would start a point. I think that solo ball. From what we've seen and from what we've heard, has stepped up and to grab that kind of the shooting guard role. I think the wing, the small forward, would have been McNeely, but assuming he's out injured, I would guess that Jalen Stewart might get the start there. Obviously, Alex Caravan, he's the one given; he's going to start, and then I think Samson Johnson probably starts the year as a center. With Terrace Reed backing him up, but that's a duo, that's a position that could easily be interchanged throughout the season.
Okay, yeah, I would ha listen, I'm going to defer to you. You're the expert, but that sounds about right to me. I mean, how when McNeely's healthy, how can you not think that he would come in and start for this team? How big of a loss is that in terms of his development? Do you see it lasting a few weeks here, or something that he can get back, let's say, in time for Thanksgiving, certainly?
Yeah, I'm sure they'd love to have him in Thanksgiving by Thanksgiving because that's when they're out of the Maui Invitational against a very, very good field. They won't rush him; they'll take their time. The calf is you got to be careful with that. It could lead to other things if you're not careful with it. And certainly, with all due respect to the next three teams that their programs they're playing, or is it they have four games before Maui. Then they're not going to need Liam McNeely to play in any of them in order to win, but they certainly want him to get on the floor and want him to get a taste of it before the competition ramps up. So I would guess that again, I don't know the severity of the injury. It doesn't sound like it's too severe, but they're definitely going to be careful with him. And I would guess he'd miss at least, again, this is totally my guess,
Okay.
probably the first couple of games for UConn.
Right. Well, let's hope that nothing gets aggravated, right? Because sometimes when you rush back and then you re-aggravate something, which isn't a good sign at all, when something like that happens. That field in Maui is really, it's always one of the best, if not the best, preseason tournaments, right? And this year they start out with Memphis, could face Michigan State in the next round, and the other side, North Carolina and Auburn over there and Iowa State. So they're going to be challenged, Dave. How much are you looking forward to that tournament?
Oh, it's going to be great. I mean, Memphis is a talented team. They have some discord there, I guess, with the coaching staff and stuff like that. But they're going to throw some talent at you either way. So I think that's even a tougher game than the coaching staff anticipated to start off. And then, yeah, like you said, it could get Michigan State in that second game. And if win or lose, there's a chance they could face an Iowa State. North Carolina. Those are top 10 teams, preseason top 10, top 15 teams. Iowa State, North Carolina, Auburn. Yeah, it's going to be a great test and a great early season test for a team that, as you mentioned, is very talented, but also has some youth and inexperience. So That'll be good for this group.
No doubt. No doubt. So, Dave, last year, you said it, an historic season, one of the best seasons we've ever seen in the Big East. Certainly, record-wise, the best season, 18-2. I don't know if anyone had that. Can they come close to duplicating that this year? It might take something like that again, 16, 17, or tying that with 18 wins. Can they do it? What is your prediction?
Well, again, I can't put anything past them. I can't put anything past Dan Hurley and his staff, and certainly got to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think it might be a tough task because while the you might not have the, I just think there's a more overall depth in the Big East. I think the lower teams are a little bit better. I think it's tough to pick that sort of in the middle of the pack. A team like Providence, I think, could finish anywhere between like seventh or eighth, or third or fourth. I think there's a lot of teams like that. I think St. John's is going to be very good. Seton Hall, who knows? They look like they might struggle, but Shaheen's a very good coach, and they could even break up into the middle of the pack there. So I think there's going to be a lot more tough, difficult games. I think Georgetown, even DePaul, I think will be a tougher battle this year with a better coach. So 18-2, it's hard to predict that. Predict to be better than that, but ultimately they could still win the Big East title without an 18-2 record. If they go 15-5, 16-4, that could very well do as well.
Yeah, I would agree. That next group, right? I think, it's unanimous. UConn predicted number one, but that next tier, Dave, Creighton, Marquette. I'm gonna put St. John's in that core too there. Some people put Xavier. I like St. John's a little bit better, but you want to throw Xavier in there as well. Those next four teams, likely in any order,
Yeah,
could any of them challenge UConn?
a lot of people like Xavier. I agree to an extent. I just want to see Fremantle healthy
Yeah.
and not rusty and remain healthy. And then when you bring in a lot of good transfers, that's great. But it's always a question of whether the mix is right. And although I do think obviously Sean Miller is a very good coach. Yeah, like I said, definitely St. John's. Villanova's got talent. I mean, there's so much. And Creighton crushed UConn last year at home,
Right.
in Omaha. And they've got Kalkbrenner and Steven Ashworth back, and a really good transfer in Pop Isaacs. So, and Greg McDermott's a very good coach. Marquette lost their two best players, but they brought in the next eight best players that they had
Right.
last year. So, it's going to be really interesting. We'll see how it goes. It's going to be a fun ride, that's for sure.
Did you happen to look at Hurley and Patino at Big East Media Day? I mean, what do you make of that relationship?
Yeah, I saw them shake hands. I don't know. It looked a little icy to me, but maybe I'm just looking for things. I
No.
think that there's no question that I don't think Rick would. In fact, I did ask Rick about UConn, and he didn't really seem to want to talk too much about UConn. He politely kind of changed the subject. So he wants to be where UConn is right now. I don't think there's any question about that. And certainly last year, Dan got under his skin a little bit. Now, last year in the calendar year from March 2023 to March 2024, Dan Hurley beat Patino four times, went 4-0 against him. If you count the NCAA tournament game when with at Iona with Iona that UConn won. So Patino's going to be tired. And they played UConn pretty well at St. John last year. All three games actually were pretty well contested games, but they lost all three. And there's no question that Rick, wants to give Dan his comeuppance this year. But I also know, and I've talked to Rick on the phone for a season preview type thing back in the summer. I do know that he does have great respect for how good UConn is right now.
Yeah, I think that's the savviness of Rick, right? I think last year he wanted to bring attention to it, kind of like a Rex Ryan, right? I didn't come here to kiss Bill Belichick's rings. And until he realized, like, you know what? Like, he's too good. I can't keep doing this, right? He wanted to, he threatened to put the UConn game in Carnesecca, which we know the Big East would never allow happen. But I think at some point you got to realize, you know what, if I keep talking about this, I'm going to keep eating crow. And I guess he doesn't want to do that. So you take the
Yeah.
other approach and show as much respect for the guy that he deserves. Just like, you know, Hurley, I'm sure growing up, you know, idolized and in some ways respected Patino. So,
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
yeah.
No, he
So
did. He's admitted that. Yeah.
there you go. There you go. So, but there's nothing like a little ego getting in the way in the Big East, and that's what it's all about, right? These coaches are so damn good. They all want to win. They've all won at some level. I love the competitive, you know, fieriness of these coaches. And, you know, in the modern Big East, Dave, this is as good as it gets with the coaches.
No, it's fun, and I think Patino knows that. Like you said, he kind of was savvy about it, and I think Hurley knows it. He knows it's entertainment, and so you know, Patino Hurley, it's going to be two great matchups in the regular season, and potentially after in the Big East tournament as well, and who knows after that. So no, it's great. It puts bas it gives it promotes college basketball a little more, provides some dramatic tension between the two programs that should be rivals anyway and haven't been because of, you know, let's be honest, St. John's hasn't really lived up to it for a while now. So, yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, I'll say this, right? The game draws a huge UConn crowd, right? You know, Store South, as UConn fans like to call it, at Madison Square Garden. The game once again is on a Sunday, February 23rd. I think both fans have it circled, and you know, if both teams are ranked, Dave, and you know, Lord knows if UConn's number one or whatever the case is, St. John's doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know, how great would it be to see 19,000 come out for that game?
Oh yeah, it'll be great. It'll, you know, unfortunately for Patino, a lot of those will be UConn fans, but that makes it fun too. The sort of the tension in the crowd, if you will. And the funny thing is, like we said, Patino wanted to hold the game at Carneseca this year, and that got nixed. But Villanova will be hosting UConn at Finneran Pavilion this season for the first time in about 30 years, other than the COVID year. So. So they're almost doing what St. John's wanted to do. It is a
Right.
Wednesday night game. It's not a weekend game, but that's going to be interesting, and I'm actually looking forward to that because I've never been to Finneran.
Yeah, listen, they call it the ski lodge, right? So it's one of those old school, you know, Big East arenas. The fans, the Villanova fans, have that huge section that goes up behind,
Yeah.
and the acoustics there gets pretty loud. So you know, not like the old cat house that they used to have there, or some of these old time, you know, or UConn's you know, field house, but still one of the oldest arenas in the Big East that's still in use.
Right. Yep. No, it's going to be fun. There'll be a lot of excitement in that game too, because I think Villanova has talent. Let's see if they can put it together. But there's no such thing as an easy road game in the Big East, and even though that's a terrible cliche, it really is true.
You're right. No, you're right. Every road win in the Big East, I don't care if it's DePaul or Georgetown or where it is, you know, is a good win. So, Dave, as we wrap up this UConn Big East preview here, give me one team that could unseat UConn if UConn does not win. Who is the most likely team?
In the Big East or
Yes,
nationally?
in the Big East, I'm talking.
I would say Creighton. I think with Kalkbrenner back for another season and probably going to win his fourth straight Defensive Player of the Year award. He's and I think Steven Ashworth will be a lot better this year too. He kind of struggled a little bit. He wasn't quite the player they thought he'd be in the first half of the Big East season last year after transferring from what is it, Utah State or Utah Valley.
State, yes,
Yeah,
I think that's what it is.
and but he really once he kind of the coaching staff really kind of instilled upon him to just take be yourself and kind of you know stop worrying about things a little bit. He really had a really a bit much better second half of the season. Really hurt UConn in Omaha. I like Pop Isaacs. I like Greg McDermott as the coach. I'd say they were to me they're the biggest challenge to UConn's throne, but. Marquette and St. John's are right there too. And if Xavier, if all, everything clicks Xavier's way, they are as well, because Fremantle is a great player. He's got to stay healthy, and they brought in some great transfers, and they got McKnight back, who's a good scorer. So I would say those are, but I guess if to answer your question, I would say Creighton.
I would tend to agree. I think St. John's, I don't know if they can crack that, top two. But listen, I mean, there's a lot of talent there as well. And Patino obviously is a great, great coach. One team that you think will overachieve more than others?
I'll go Providence because I really like Kim English. I think he's really set the tone there. He's recruiting well. He's a good coach. They have a lot of, again, they brought in some new guys, so it's a matter of how it all melds together. They got similar to what we've been talking about with Fremantle. They've got Bryce Hopkins back now. If he's the Bryce Hopkins he was 2 years ago, or even by and large the first part of last season, you got an all Big East player right there. They lose Devin Carter to the lottery, but I'd say they're a team that could really. I think they're a little banged up right now. They've got some health issues, but if they get healthy and Hopkins is Hopkins again, think Providence is a team you could see slide into that top 4 or 5 of the Big East, no question.
Okay. And Dave, I don't know if you did this in your preview this year or not, but do you have a final prediction on UConn's record overall, Big East, and how far they will go?
Well, I didn't really kind of look at each game and kind of went down the schedule like that. But I don't think that I think 18-2 is tough to predict. I think again, 15-5, 16-4 sounds about right. 15-5 could be enough to win because I think there's gonna, like I said, there's not more parity in the league. And I think UConn, how far can they go? I mean, they can go to the Final Four, and if they're in the final, if you make the Final Four, you can win it all. So, it's really, people don't realize how difficult it is just to win once. I mean, look at the programs who've never even won. They're trying to win the third in a row. It's going to be very, very, very difficult. If you ask me, UConn against the field, I'd probably pick the field. But just the fact that you're asking that question is shows you how great UConn has been. So, yeah, UConn could get the three-peat this year. There's no question. But it's going to be fun and interesting to see how they do.
Yeah, and if that ever happens, and the Knicks fold, we could be talking about Hurley to the NBA all over again next summer. All
Oh, great. I can't wait for that. Yeah. That's fun.
right, Dave Borges, CTInsider.com, Hearst Media Group. Follow him on Twitter at Dave Borges. We'll be checking in with you all season long, Dave, and I look forward to seeing you out there. Certainly, Seton Hall, UConn, and St. John's, UConn. Thanks for the time.
All right, Brian, sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Okay, there you go. Dave Borges from CTInsider.com. Look, don't bet against UConn and Dan Hurley. Okay, there's a lot of teams out there. If you're looking to throw $100 down right now, you want to put it on Kansas, you want to put it on Alabama, you want to put it on Michigan State, you want to put it on North Carolina, Duke, go ahead. My money is on UConn right now. I rode them last year. I'm going to ride them again this year. But there's a lot more to talk about in the tri-state than just UConn. St. John's deservedly has a lot of hype behind them. All right. And judging by the preseason, this team is ready. They are coming together nicely. I was at that scrimmage against Rutgers, and that was a team that fell apart in the first half, and Rutgers went on this huge run, and St. John's kept chipping away and chipping away and chipping away, and the next thing you know, they were down by double digits a couple of times in that game, and you heard all about it, you've read all about it by now. RJ Lewis was magnificent. Kadari Richmond and Davon Smith were making one stop after another down the stretch, and Zubi Ejiofor was a man child, and Aaron Scott did what he does. And look, this team's deep, they're talented. crunch time, they made the plays and won. And then they had a huge defensive effort against Towson, who's predicted to win their conference, and they played a lot of guys in that. So look, this team deserves to be considered in the top four in the Big East. And you know what? I like them to finish as high as third in the Big East. You know, Kadari Richmond and RJ Lewis are the stars. They are the big guns, okay? You can talk about all the other players that you want. There's a lot of talent, but this team will go as far as Kadari Richmond takes them. And RJ Lewis, as much as, you know, he needs to be factored in there as well, he's not the one with the ball in his hands most of the time. It'll be Kadari Richmond. He is the straw that will stir the drink. And like I've said before in my other podcast, he has assembled the greatest group of talent that Kadari Richmond has ever had on the college basketball court. This St. John's team is primed. We've heard it, we've read about it. Year two under Patino, right? Anywhere where he's gone, whether it's been Boston University or Providence or Kentucky or Louisville. We're going to leave the Celtics out of the equation, okay? We're not going there to the NBA. But every year under year two, that has been the year that the team has gotten back or gotten to the NCAAs, right? That Providence 87 team was one of the greatest and most revered teams in Providence history. And I remember it so well with Delray Brooks and Billy Donovan. But it's different now. This is not a team that, you know, Patino inherited and built up and added pieces to it, you know, and had all these returning players. It's right. There's still a lot of new faces here. He revamped it. And yes, I know that, you know, Ejiofor returns and Dunlap returns and Simeon Welcher returns, right? I know that there are returning players here, but you're adding stars from the portal that have never played for Rick Pitino. You're adding Kadari Richmond. You're adding Davon Smith. You're adding Iwuchukwu, right? You're adding Aaron Scott. There are a lot of new pieces here. So it's still going to take time for Rick Pitino to put this team together. And quite honestly, I'm not worried about Davon Smith. Okay, this is a guy who comes in with all Pac-12 honors and five triple doubles leading the nation last year and top 10 in assists. I think he was sixth in the country in assists last year, right? He is a human triple double waiting to happen. I'm not worried about him, but in the preseason, he didn't exactly light it up. So I think it's going to take him time to figure out, you know, East Coast basketball and what it takes to fit in with all of these other star players here and, you know, readjust himself to a new system under Rick Pitino, new demands. It's not Utah, it's not the Pac-12, so it's going to take him time. I think Aaron Scott has picked it up quite nicely coming in from North Texas, and from what I saw in that scrimmage against Rutgers, he's going to be fine. I mean, what's not to like about him? 6'7", he's long, he can shoot. He's a great stand-up shooter, but he can also create his own shot and he can slash. Boy, I think he is an X factor every single game. All right. And Simeon Wilcher, will he make that jump? Okay. It looks like he's going to start. Will he go from freshman who, you know, was like a yo-yo and didn't really know his role and didn't really figure things out until February and March, to a player who can be an impact player? Will he make that big leap from freshman to sophomore, and, you know, gain the trust that Rick Pitino so desires, right? He wants to be trusted by Pitino, and Pitino wants to be able to trust him. So, you know, we need to see it. We need to see it consistently, night in and night out. If RJ Lewis is healthy and Kadari Richmond is motivated, okay, those two are going to be the constants. What are we going to get from the other players night in and night out on a consistent basis? Those are the questions about this team. I mean, the schedule is set up nicely for them. This team can really go into the season and go into the Bahamas with an undefeated record. All right, their biggest challenge early on will be New Mexico at the Garden. And, Rick going up against Richard Pitino, father, son, how great is that? Doesn't happen too often in college basketball, but here we are. And the Lobos are coming off an NCAA tournament last year, and Pitino can coach his ass off. He's not Rick, he's not dad, but this kid can coach. So if they can get past that little bump in the road and go into the Bahamas against a very good Baylor team, that is going to be their first real major test for St. John's. And that's going to be something. So I think they come out of that. I don't listen, if they beat Baylor, they're winning that tournament. Okay. But I think realistically, I'm going to put them 1-1 in that, and somehow they're not the champions in that tournament. But I think they come out of the preseason 10-1. I think this team will win 14 games in the Big East, 14-6, and that will put them right in the mix in the top four and go 24-7 overall. And you're probably looking at, a 5 or 6 seed in the NCAA tournament. That's what I think this team can achieve. 24-7 overall, 14-6 in the Big East. Outside shot at 15-5, sure. If they're 15-5, that's going to be in the discussion for top two or three in the Big East. Win at least one game in the NCAA tournament, I think that will happen. And if they do that, it'll be the first time since 2000 that St. John's has won a game in the Big East tournament with the Sweet 16. At that point, Sweet 16, it all depends on the matchup, right? Are they in that 4-5? Are they in that 6-3? Really, it depends on matchups at that point. And who knows? But I'm going to give them, if I were a betting man, they make the NCAA tournament and win at least one game in year two under Rick Pitino. And Kadari Richmond is first team All Big East. RJ Lewis is second team All Big East. That's what I think will happen. And if there's some player, because they don't have three teams in the Big East, who makes honorable mention, I'm going to put Aaron Scott in there. All right. I know Davon Smith was predicted there by the coaches, but I'm going to throw Aaron Scott in there. I am a huge Aaron Scott fan. If they put three players on the All Big East team, then Aaron Scott is going to be honorable mention with Kadari on first team and RJ on second team. All right. Seton Hall, the mystery team. Only three players returning from the NIT championship team. Huge losses. Dre Davis took his talents to Mississippi, and Kadari Richmond went across the river, as we all know. And that game at the Prudential Center, January 18th, is going to be the loudest game of the season, bar none, at the Prudential Center. It will be the rowdiest game and the loudest game and the loudest atmosphere, and booze will be raining from the Prudential Center. There will be a lot of St. John's fans there, and rightfully so. Depending on how Seton Hall is doing at the time, will dictate how many Seton Hall fans are there and how many have sold their or how many have sold their tickets. Let's be honest. Okay, but this team has three returning players who two of which will play major roles. All right, Dylan Adewusu, Isaiah Coleman, and David Tubek. Tubek is an unknown. If he's healthy, he can contribute to this team. But he was never really healthy last year, and we never really knew what he could do. So that's a big question there. But will Isaiah Coleman make that jump from all Big East freshmen, and he was one of the top five freshmen in the Big East, to a player who is a borderline all Big East player. Seton Hall fans hope so. Isaiah Coleman hopes so. Shaheen Holloway hopes so. But I'm not ready to say this is Isaiah Coleman's team. This is Dylan Adewusu's team. Okay. And it's probably going to be Chauncey Jenkins' team. The transfer from Old Dominion, who was second team all Sun Belt, has led the team in scoring during the preseason in both of their scrimmages, a win over Quinnipiac and a 22-point loss to Maryland, by all accounts. It wouldn't surprise me if this graduate transfer leads Seton Hall in scoring this year, Chauncey Jenkins. I think he was born to score. I think his game is going to translate to the Big East. He is a player who comes in, is experienced, has a lot of pedigree, and is at 6'4", a big guard to handle. He is a player who is going to play a key role. Scotty Middleton is a player that is 6'7" and is uber talented, and is one of those players who came in as a former four-star recruit. This roster is littered with former four-star recruits who, as I said earlier, come in with some baggage or question marks. And, you know, they took different paths to get here, but they're all here. Zion Harmon is another one. Okay. I said Scotty Middleton, and Gus Yeldon is another one. Garway Duo is certainly another one. So these are players who, they have high ceilings, but they also have low floors. We don't know where they go because they haven't proven it. They haven't proven it consistently enough at this level from where they came from. Now, I know that they come in with a lot of talent, but again, they have to prove that they can do it in the Big East. And someone like, you know, Zion Harmon, who did it at Bethune-Cookman, this is a huge jump, a huge jump. But boy, I can't wait to see him in person. I can't wait to see the speed and the quickness of what he can do. I think in the beginning, I think you're going to see Garway Duo play point guard for this team. He is oozing with talent. And we saw a little bit last year at Providence, but he just couldn't crack Kim English's lineup consistently. Most of it was because of his defense and because he didn't have a consistent, really, he had a non-existent three-point shot. But I think he is going to start. I think your starting five on this team is going to be Garway Duo, Dylan Adewusu, Chauncey Jenkins, Isaiah Coleman, and Yassine Toumi to start the year, with Scotty Middleton and Prince Oligbe from Boston College to transfer, and Zion Harmon and Gus Yeldon if he's healthy and in shape. And I think you're going to see the freshman, Jassim Felton, who, by what I'm hearing, has really shown some talent in the scrimmages and also in practices. And he is a four-star recruit who is going to see some time, and maybe in the shape of what Isaiah Coleman did last year, could really, really play a key role and have a nice freshman season for Shaheen Holloway. But, you know, Yassine Toumi is the other player who I mentioned, but is a little bit of an unknown, right? Seton Hall is lacking a true center, and that's going to be a real problem, rebounding and defending. There's no Jaden Bediako. There's no Tyrese Samuel. There's no Casey Ndefo. Okay, players who Shaheen counted on to, you know, bang and get results and get fouls and defend other big guys, right? All the great big men in the Big East. You're not seeing that. Yassine Toumi is a very skilled transfer from Evansville by way of France, right? He's more of a Euro-style big man, a 6'10 perimeter player who needs to play defense. Otherwise, he's going to see the bench a lot. Emmanuel Okafor was counted on to be a presence in the middle, the transfer from Louisville, and be a big body, but he's been suffering from body cramping and dehydration for weeks, so he's not going to be ready for the start of the season. So, you know, thankfully, the schedule for Seton Hall is very favorable in the beginning, and there was a reason why Shaheen Holloway did that. St. Peter's, Fordham, Hofstra, Wagner. You know, they're not going to be tested really. I'm not saying Hofstra isn't a challenge. You know, that's going to be a very tricky game, but VCU is going to be their first, you know, test. The Atlantic 10 preseason favorites. That's going to be a big test for this team. And Seton Hall is going to have to figure out the rotation and how they're going to defend the post and how they're going to rebound. So they have four games to figure it out. So what do I think of this team? It's a mystery, right? I can guarantee you this. They're going to grind. They're going to defend. He's going to roll out 9, 10, 11 players at times, all right? It's going to be in the mold of how he plays these players in the shape of that St. Peter's Elite Eight team where you could see a hockey line change. Five in, five out. Okay, here comes the second unit, whatever it is, bring me some energy, bring me instant offense, show me you belong. And there's going to be a lot of that in the beginning. This team's going to grind, they are going to defend, and they're going to push you for 40 minutes. I guarantee that. They're going to have to win with defense, and they're going to have to win with guts and guile until Shaheen Holloway and these players can get the chemistry. And hopefully it's sooner rather than later for this team. All right. Hopefully it's sometime by February that you're starting to see this team gel. And that's typically the time that you see Shaheen Holloway teams gel, February and March. Will it be too late? I don't think so, because let's face it, you know, this is not a year where they're playing Xavier and UConn and Marquette and Creighton and St. John's right out of the gate in the Big East. The Big East schedule makers did them some favors. And, you know, I know they open up at Villanova, but then two of the next four are Georgetown and DePaul with Xavier in between. So, you know, a 2-2 start at minimum for this team, Georgetown and DePaul at home, that's realistic going into the Providence game. 2-2 at minimum. So there's time in the Big East for these players to figure out the Big East schedule. Anything less than 2-2, and this season can head south in a hurry, but I'm not betting against Shaheen Holloway either. All right. Until we see these players for a good 5, 6 games and really get a feel for what they can do, and then going into that Rutgers game, we'll know sometime by the end of November where this team is, because that Charleston Classic, they're going to be tested, you know, and by the time the calendar turns and, you know, Monmouth turns into NJIT, this team could have some wins under its belt, and it's a crapshoot. You cannot say what team is the favorite in the Charleston Classic. You know, Seton Hall can win it just as well as VCU can. So it'll be interesting to see what Seton Hall can do the first month of the season. My prediction overall, the coaches picked them 10th. History shows that Seton Hall typically finishes at or above where they are predicted. That's what recent history has shown over the last 10, 11 years since the Big East has revamped. My prediction, 7th place. I think they will finish better than Villanova because their coach is better. I think they will finish ahead of Butler, not because their coach is better, because Thad Matta has proven to be a very good coach. I just think somehow Seton Hall has had Butler's number, and I think they'll finish higher than Georgetown and DePaul. 7th place, 10-10 in the Big East, 9-2 in the non-conference, 19-12 overall. I think this team gets to 500 in the Big East, and that could get them a 7th place finish. I think they go 2-1 in the Charleston Classic and a loss to Rutgers. There's their 9 wins in the non-conference. That's my prediction for Seton Hall. That's my prediction for St. John's. UConn, I am right there with Dave. I think they get to 16 or 17 wins. Gun to my head, I'm going to say one win short of last year. I'm going to say 17 and 3, no worse than 16 and 4, but my prediction is 17 and 3, and they will win the Big East tournament, and they will be a one seed. They will play in Newark in the East Regional, and they will get a chance and come out of the East Regional and go to the Final Four. That is my prediction for UConn this year. The Big East is going to be fun as hell, and the bottom has gotten a lot better. Top to bottom, this conference is better than it was last year, top to bottom. I'm not saying the top teams aren't better, okay? Because Creighton took a little step back, UConn took a little step back, but taking a step back doesn't mean they're still not very good, and elite teams or a number one seed overall. So the Big East opens up this week. College basketball opens up this week in the tri-state. Two games. I will give you two games as we wrap up this tri-state college basketball podcast. Two games in the tri-state this week to look out for. Quinnipiac at Yale, Iona at Princeton on Monday. Quinnipiac and Yale are two teams that are predicted right at the top or at the top of their conferences. Quinnipiac won the MAC last year, regular season, before losing in the semifinals. Yale won the Ivy League and knocked off Auburn in the NCAA tournament. They return two very good players in John Pulakitas, one of the best shooters in the country, and Bez Mbang, the two-time Ivy League Defensive Player of the Year. Tom Pokora has retained his top two players in an era where everyone in the MAC lost their players to graduation or to the portal. Somehow, some way, Tom Pokora predicted, or I shouldn't say predicted, convinced Savion Lewis and Amari Monroe, the top two scorers, and only returning all conference players in the MAC to return, okay, to any team. They also added Ryan Mabry. New Jersey college basketball fans, New Jersey high school fans, you know that name, Mabry. His three sisters were all stars at Manasquan High School under Lisa Kokoda. They went on to success in college. Marina is still playing in the WNBA for the Connecticut Sun. Ryan Mabry played once not so long ago at CBA. He's a transfer from Miami of Ohio, can really shoot the three. He is a player, an impact transfer. He's a junior at Quinnipiac. He is an impact player in the MAC. This team is going to be fun to watch as well. So Quinnipiac and Yale. The other is Iona and Princeton. I don't think Iona will be able to knock off Princeton, but that is a very intriguing game. Princeton, number one in the Ivy League, of course, by all the coaches. Two of the best 1-2 players you'll find anywhere in the country. Okay, and Xavien Lee and Caden Pierce, two of the best 1-2 combination players in the country. Xavien Lee is a future NBA player. I'm telling you right now, if he doesn't get drafted, he is going to earn a contract in the NBA. So he is a future NBA player, and Caden Pierce could start on many Power Five conference teams. They came back to Princeton. That team is loaded. Blake Peters, the trio returns for them. Iona has retooled. The master retooler, Tobin Anderson, has retooled that roster with some big time transfers. James, none bigger than James Biggie Patterson. All right, one of the best Division II players of the year. Iona's Tobin Anderson went back to his roots at Stack and picked up one of the best D2 scorers in the country in Biggie Patterson. You have DeJure Reeves, the Syracuse native, comes over from Northern Colorado, an all Big Sky player, big time scorer. And also, this name, New Jersey college basketball fans will know, one time St. Peter's player was on Shaheen Holloway's Elite 8 team. Clarence Rupert returns to the area after spending 2 years at Southern Illinois. So those are three players to watch out for Iona. That's going to be a fun game to monitor. Iona and Princeton, Quinnipiac and Yale, and of course, I'll give you one more, a little bonus, all eyes in Connecticut. Not because it's going to be close. Sorry, Anthony Latina. Not that it's going to be close, but because it is the home opener for the two-time defending national champion UConn Huskies, opening up the season against Sacred Heart, raising championship banner number six at Storrs. Should be some celebration for the UConn Huskies and their fans as they try to become the first team since those dynastic UCLA teams from the 60s and 70s to three-peat. College basketball 24-25. Let the games begin. Before we go, thank you to my sponsor, Mike Supel from RE/MAX Revolution. Give him a call, 201-988-2577. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore, and tell them that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Until next time, my name is Brian DeNovellis. I thank you for listening. I thank you for sharing and downloading the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Enjoy the games, everyone. So long.